Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Guys.
Welcome to the Ghost Story Guys. I'm Brennan Storer.
I'm Paul Bestel.
And this is a show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 157. And as always, we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. Mr. Bestel, my friend, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm learning just how much edible things I own.
And not in the fun way.
No. No. In the new puppy way.
Yes. You have a furry friend named Theo who has joined your household?
Yes. Yes. He's officially what they call a spointer, which is a cross between a spaniel and a pointer.
Oh, fascinating. So which half of that likes chewing on your stuff, do you figure?
Both of them, by the way, he's doing it.
You posted a picture of, because you've got an Instagram account for him, which is I quite love, and I will post a link to in the show notes. But you posted some stuff that he noshed on, which was a program from the football match.
Yes.
And a new album, was it? A new vinyl?
Yes, he chewed the corner off the cover. So I'm deliberating whether I'm too precious to not just buy a new version.
And hide it from him.
Yeah, well, they are normally. When we first got him, he was asleep in the spare room with me. So we're sort of gaining into the household and getting settled. And the first couple of mornings, after about 2 days, I heard this funny noise and I just heard this thunk. I was like, what the hell's that? And I looked out the bed and he started pulling books off the bookshelf. What are you doing there, little shit?
He's feeling so, literary, Dad.
He is. Well, at least he's got good taste. He went, World's Greatest Mysteries and Ghosts. Are they real?
There was that feels like a sign, if nothing else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So watch this space.
I love it. Des, don't forget to check the links in the show notes for a link to the Instagram account for Paul's dog, Theo, who is next to him.
It's not mine. It's Theo's.
Oh, yeah. It's for Theo's Instagram account. And if you hear anything on this recording, it is not ghosts. It is probably Theo. Theo is next to Paul having a snooze right now, but that can change at any moment.
Not going on his normal nighttime routine. This is it. It'll midnight. When we finish recording, we will hit the streets, seeing how many foxes we spot tonight.
Oh, right. I am too lazy to have a dog, Paul. I know this. I know this in my heart. I love them. I love animals, but I would be a bad dog owner.
I think loving a dog allows you to be far better than a bad owner.
No, that maybe. I would love him very much, but I don't know if I would be great for his health. Like a lot of the people in my life, Paul.
Yeah, me and you both, mate.
As for my part, I have been, I've really been looking forward to today's show, because today's show is a topic that we've sort of batted around for a long time. We've had little stories kind of on the topic, but I decided to put together an episode of stories about military haunting. And I've always been a sucker for military haunting stuff. I love military horror films like The Objective or Red Sands. Even when they're not great, there's something about them that I just enjoy. And so I went and dug out a bunch of stories of troops on deployment, mostly from Iraq, with one story from Afghanistan, which I've included because it bears resemblance to a story I heard from here in Montreal a few days ago. And we'll talk about that when the story happens. Apart from that, I have been living life. As I mentioned to you, I joined an improv class to sort of get me out of my head, teach me some new tricks. And one of the things I learned about myself, Paul, is that I go dark very quickly in improv.
Hey, look, the trouble guy's back.
Yeah. Look, it's the weirdo. Well, funny you say that because I had a moment like that. And of course, I told you about this off air, but Nick obviously she's very, very good at genealogy. And she has helped me with figure out a lot of stuff about my family. She's helped actually quite a few people now figure stuff about their family. And here in Montreal, there happens to be a library which has access to this particular genealogy portal where you have to actually be in library to access it. You can't access it from outside. So she asked if I would go find some stuff for her. As it happened, on the first day I went there, they were closed. There was some kind of job action happening. And so I went back another day. And as I was walking there, it's several subway stops away from where I am. So I went there and it was a relatively nice day. So I just had my hoodie on. I didn't have my big heavy coat on. And I was carrying this book. And it's a very heavy book. And I'm really quite enjoying it. But as I was walking past this one particular university, this young man in a denim jacket with a beard steps out of the university, pulls out a pack of smoke, so I assume he's having a smoke, and he just locks eyes with me. Now, I have sunglasses on, but he locks eyes with me. And I assumed he just is acknowledging me, because, you know, that happens. You lock eyes with a stranger, you nod, great, okay, move on. So I nod at him. Well, he walks up to me with his fingers in the shape of a gun and just jams them, like, pretty close to my face and goes, boom, boom, which does not seem to me like a real friendly gesture. Now, I had this book in my hand, and my first instinct was to fucking smoke him with this thing because I have a bit of a temper, and I thought this would look real good on your face. And as I had that thought, as I had that quick motion in the muscle, I remembered something. The night before, literally the night before, I had had a dream about someone goading me into a fight and ending up doing 30 days in jail. And again, literally the night before, I'd woken up from that dream maybe 4 hours prior to this. And here I was ready to smash this guy, or to try at least to smash this guy's face in with a book. And I remembered the dream and I thought, no, I don't give a shit. You can make fake gun noises at my face all you want. I'm not doing time, you know, on the off chance this is a prophetic dream. I'm not doing time for this. So I just looked at him, looked away, kept walking. And I tell you, man, I am really grateful. I sometimes I bitch to my internally. I think, oh, you know, I don't know that I have spirit guides. You know, I always feel I'm a very lonely man generally. But I think that dream proves that is not the case. Because without it, I probably would have done something really aggressive and really fucking stupid. And so, yeah.
Well, is it really a crime if they can't find a body?
I don't think. See, I didn't plan it that well. If I'd followed him home and gotten his address and coming back later, I mean, yeah, it's possible. I mean, it's Montreal. There's a lot of organized crime here. They're used to this kind of things happening. But yeah, this would have been a very spur of the moment rearrange his face with my book, and probably ended up in a very ugly fight. Because let's face it, I haven't been in a fight in a very long time, so I'm not pretending like I'm some kind of He-Man here. So yeah, the other side was looking out for me. And in one final little funny note, the book I was reading, the subtitle is Tragedy and Masculinity in the films of Walter Hill. So I just feel like that was the icing on the cake. That was, you know, that Kev, when he was in Cursed Films, he talks about the God wink, you know, and if ever there was one of those things in my fucking life, that was a giant goddamn God wink. God going, huh? Huh? Almost got you, you stupid bastard. So, yeah, lesson learned. And the library was closed again anyway. So it was all wasted effort. But I did not go to jail, and I think that's the important thing.
That's always a good start to a week.
That's what I figure.
Reminds me of my 20s.
fair. I don't know if you've ever told all of that story on the show.
Which one?
Fair. The one where they tried to stitch you up.
Oh, yeah. When I was facing 15 years.
Yeah. Join the Patreon for that story, folks.
Yeah. Great times.
And of course, had I gone to jail, I would not have been able to send out all the personalized thank you messages to everyone who's been buying things from our new web store at ghoststoryguys.com. We've partnered with the e-commerce platform Fourth Wall. It allows us to sell our merch directly from our website. It's all print on demand. We don't handle anything, but it's print on demand. And then thanks to the platform, we can send you it's me because it doesn't work with two locations, but you get a personalized thank you from me. And it's super cool. It's a really neat way to do that. And so, yeah, that again, I've really enjoyed sending those. I'm kind of hitting my stride, getting used to seeing myself on camera. And so if you want a ghost story, if you want a Goat Story Guys shirt designed by Catherine Holmes, based on a gag, of course, from episode 156 with Kev Eustace, then you can get that at ghoststoryguys.com and you get a personalized thank you note as well.
And you will be able to live deliciously.
Guaranteed. Star. Not actually guaranteed. All right. Well, before we get to the stories of horror on deployment, we got to thank our patrons.
This one's for the patrons.
Patrons, you are the right hook to our Indiana Jones, which is to say, without you, we wouldn't be able to carry on this fight at all. And so, of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but we would especially like to thank our latest patrons. They are
Tracy Davis,
Sharon Tiffin,
Keith Dale,
Brody Daniels,
Melissa Smith,
John,
Robert Polsgrove,
and Katie Trott. And we'd also like to thank people who've given us one-time gifts via the new ghoststoryguys.com. You can do that when you place an order if you want to add a little bit extra, and we will shout you out here as well. And those people are Tracy Ronson,
Wanda Dalkey,
Rhonda Sheen,
Robin R. Tien,
and Catherine Jack. Again, thank you so, so much. Both to our patrons and to people who gave, some of the people who gave one-time donations are also patrons, but all of you help make the show go. Everyone who listens to Ghost Story Guys helps make us who we are, but patrons and folks who buy merchandise and give these one-time gifts, you truly are who allow the show to continue, and we cannot tell you how much we appreciate it. If you want to join the team, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. And we'll tell you about all the cool stuff you get at the end of the show, but we will say for $1 a month, get an ad-free feed. Who doesn't want that? Ads suck. So again, for more information about that, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. One last thing, shout out to our composer, Rainy Days for Ghosts. Rainy Days for Ghosts is a project of film journalist and composer Jerry Smith. You can find Rainy Days for Ghosts on streaming platforms everywhere. And if you want to hire Jerry to score your next project, shoot them an email at rainydaysforghosts@gmail.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then it's time for Haunting in the Military. Welcome back. As we said before the break, this episode is all about the dangers of deployment, haunting in the military, and I know we have a lot of folks in the armed forces who listen to our show, and if you hear this episode and you think, oh, I got a better story than that, send it in, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com, or hell, even if you don't think it's better, I still want to hear it. We both want to hear it. So ghoststoryguys@gmail.com, or of course, you can record it as a voice note and email it to us at ghoststoryguys@gmail.com, and we will we'll do our best to play it on the show. So, before we do that, though, we gotta check the mail.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
Paul, email, I do love. Well, technically, this isn't necessarily email, but it is communication, we'll say. Yes. I went and pulled some comments from YouTube, because it's just not something I do very often. I thought it'd be a fun way to... fun way to reach out to those folks as well, because we are picking up more listeners on YouTube, And I want you all to know, we appreciate you too.
So our first comment is Lindsay, which was on YouTube. And Lindsay says, I've just listened to the episode on Lost Time and the clicking. I used to work in a home I believed to be haunted. And before activity started, there was often a sound like someone snapping a leather belt together. I thought this might be of interest.
Very much so. That's really, really interesting, Lindsay. Thank you so much. Next up, we have a comment from Peter, also from YouTube. Peter says, this is the second show I've heard. It's great. The banter is brilliant. Had me laughing out loud all the way through. Well, thank you very much, Peter. That is, well, that's cool as hell. Thank you for listening. And yeah, again, I love that we're picking up people on YouTube. I have to give a big thanks to Joseph Camo of the Cardinal Rule, who is a fan of the show and a friend of mine now, and of course, co-host with me of the horror movie show Weird Together. Joseph was hugely instrumental in turning around the Ghost Story Guys YouTube channel. Without him, these folks wouldn't have found us. So thanks to you guys for finding us, and thanks to Joseph for helping us to get there.
I'm just having to call in a care substitute as he's gone a bit nuts. He was just running around and around and around, decided he wanted to eat me while I was reading that comment.
I wondered what was going on.
Yeah, it was like that because he got my hand in his mouth. Next up is from James. The one crazy thing that I haven't heard anybody talk about is back when we had rotary dial phones. More often than you might think, you'd pick up the phone to call someone and they'd be there on the other line, either saying that they were picking up to call you or that they had just heard the phone ring. Both instances happened when you hadn't dialed at all. You just picked up the phone and you'd get launched into the world of the supernatural.
I mean, James, you make a great point. Although I will say that has carried through for me into the cell phone era. I don't know about you, Paul. Have you had that?
It's one of those things I often remember, that the madness of a crossed line on an old dial-up phone.
Oh, you'd right, be talking,
And then somebody else would come and go, hello? Hello there? Is that you? Hilda?
I mean, on the subject of like the anticipatory thing, I still have that. The other day I texted Nick something and her message came in after mine. But as it turned out, the message I just picked up my phone, went to text her. And my statement answered the question that came in seconds after I sent it, had already sent me the question as I'd sent the answer, but I did not realize I was answering a question. It was spooky.
There have been lots of studies about that particular phenomenon. I'm not sure if they've carried on into the modern digital age, but they certainly did in the old fashioned way of phoning people, where people would often have that sense of premonition that the phone was about to ring, or they knew who was calling and they'd ring.
Interesting. I mean, I guess there is possibly some kind of biological precedent for that. I mean, it's an electrical impulse, so it makes sense. It doesn't seem impossible, I guess I should say, that you could sense something like that coming your way.
Yeah, they said it was just, as always, these explanations of these things, it's just chance. It's coincidence. That's all it is.
Sure. Jesus. What is it, Mark Maron said about atheists? They're buzzkill poetry assassins. All right. So this next message comes from Michael via Facebook. Michael says, so I've only just started listening to the podcast, and I'm not sure if you still respond to listener messages, but I wanted to share this story and perhaps ask if you all have a possible explanation. I'm currently working in a boarding school, and I was walking back home from a gym in a nearby town. The school is down an unlit country lane, and as I was walking down it, I saw this roughly human-shaped shadow figure in the road. I stopped for a second as I knew I'd have to walk past it to get back home, and as soon as I looked more closely at it, it started to run away. Then, very suddenly, a car went past me, and as the headlights hit the spot where the figure was, it vanished. I was initially worried, as I reasoned it may have been a student at first, but I couldn't see anywhere they could have ducked out of the way. Then the shadow figure idea hit me. My major confusion, though, is that it wasn't associated with any feeling of dread, and it didn't seem intent on scaring me in any way. I haven't seen the figure since. What do you all think? And I responded to Michael separately on Facebook, and the answer is yes, we still respond to as many messages as my limited, as my neurodivergence allows me to. But I did respond to him separately, but I say here what I said there. I've actually heard a story like this. A fella I used to know in Victoria, he was working at a cannery. I think it was on Quadra Island, but I could be wrong. It might have just been in the town of Campbell River. But either way, he was in the town of Campbell River, which is a rural town north, about 4 hours north of Victoria on Vancouver Island. And he was walking home one night, same as Michael, and he saw the same thing. He saw, I think it was one or two shadow people illuminated by the lights of passing cars crossing the road from one side to the other, and on both sides was heavy forest. And as with Michael's experience, there was no sense of dread, there was no sense of doom. It was just a thing he saw and then didn't see anymore. And so, Michael, we don't have an explanation, but I do think that, as we'll see in these stories that you're going to hear in a moment, shadow people don't always have that association with them. You know, they don't always immediately produce that dread. In fact, in my book, A Strange Little Place, available everywhere, fine books are sold, there is a story of a family who had essentially what sounds like a hat man living in their house for a very long time. And they just thought it was the ghost of their grandfather, because he used to be a cattle driver, and he had a long black duster and a black hat. So they just assumed that's who it was. And it never upset them at all. The kids weren't crazy about it, but they didn't have like a choking feeling of dread. They just didn't care for it. So I think, again, it's that thing where we do sometimes tend to rely too much on tropes in this topic. You know, we tend to rely a little too much on, well, it sounds like this, so it must mean this. These things must come with these associations. And that's not always the case. So you may have just been witness to a very, very cool, very unique event, Michael.
Or the Fae.
Well, or that. I don't want to say it.
Okay. I'll say it's okay.
Get him. It's him. Go for him.
Our next message is from Caitlin. And Caitlin says, so I just got to the part in episode 153 where you talk about hearing the argument in your apartment from the whole other side of the building. And also where you talk about the sensory deprivation tanks and how you could still hear things from the front of the place. My whole immediate family at one point worked in the local movie theatre. Small towns, right? And let me tell you, among all the weird crap that happened, your stories reminded me of a particular event. Sure, we'd been followed home by some of the entities there, been stalked in the hall and had physical interaction with some stuff, but this was a bit different. My mother was an assistant manager, and my two older brothers did janitorial work while she closed up. When she'd gotten all the money counted up and were ready for deposit, inventory done, blah blah blah, she rolled up her sleeves and grabbed a broom. I sometimes helped, but I'd been taking care of our grandmother, who now lived in the wake of our grandfather's passing. So I was at home in bed when I had a nightmare. A skinless bloody dog with huge fangs was dragging its broken legs around and whining and growling at me. No matter how I tried to back up, I couldn't. Like I was caught in a circle, and this thing was near enough to nip. When they got home, I went down to greet them, and they asked what I was still doing up, and if I was okay. I told them about my dream, and they all stopped to look at me, faces stony. They said that they'd heard growling and whining at the theatre the entire time they'd been cleaning. We're Christian, but we know that the world of the spiritual is so much more complicated than some of our stricter, shall we say, brethren like to believe. Whatever was stalking them that night was put off by my fervent post-nightmare prayers, and demon or not, it was most definitely malicious, or as Paul would say, malevolent.
Oh, that makes me happy.
Good, I'm glad. I'll be down to deliver other stories when I'm not on a tiny foam keyboard, haha. And now I'm wondering how I can get into the projector booth into the theatre again, so I can take a picture of some of the graffiti no one can clean off the floor that mysteriously appeared overnight during one particularly active period in 2008. Well, there's a cliffhanger from Caitlin.
I'll just say, Caitlin, I mean, if they don't have a security system, they're never going to know, but don't break into places. Do not commit burglary. That is the official position of the Ghost Story Guys. However, is it a crime if you don't get caught?
No.
That's what House of Pain told me. If I can't trust Danny Boy and Everlast, Paul, who can I trust?
Everlast wouldn't lie to us.
Because a hero ain't nothing but a sandwich, and a legend ain't nothing but a car.
Ah, the 90s. Any old shit.
I'm putting the stake in the ground. I liked House of Pain's second album, and for some reason the best song on that album, Legend, was not actually included on the album. It was released as a single too early, and it was forgotten. I'm going to put a link in the show notes because I like it, and I don't care. You can judge me all you want, folks, but I like that song. Silence. Stony Silence from Paul Bestel.
I'd moved on from House of Pain by the time the second album came.
That's fair. I Jump Around is still classic, but I defy anyone to name another track from that first album.
Yes, it's now a traditional British party song, Jump Around, which makes me chuckle.
I would say that I'm sure the Irish love that, but I'm sure they want to try and divest themselves of House of Pain as anyone else.
Absolutely. It is one of those songs that always takes me to as soon as I hear it, I always think it's 1993.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I will say there is a Busta Rhymes song, Calm Down, featuring Eminem, where he samples samples Jump Around. And I remember it because at the time I was kind of into Busta Rhymes. This is like 2000 something when this came out. And I was kind of into Eminem and I thought, oh, that's a cool mashup. And House of Pain, I mean, that's a cool beat. I'm really curious to see what they do with that. And boy, oh boy, is it the most annoying fucking thing you can possibly imagine. Maybe if I remember, I'll put a link to that in the show notes too. This will be the music educational episode of Ghost Story, guys.
Packing up, packing in.
Let me begin. I came to win. Battle me. That's a sin. We're going to stop now.
Carries on like this. We'll be doing Snow lyrics.
And no one wants that. In fact, before we scare you any further, we should probably get to the stories. The Shack. Let me tell you first thing, I'm a redneck. I don't do ghosts and crystals and psychics and all that shit. My ex Jenny used to try and get me to talk about it because she was into it, but I wouldn't. My mama raised me to believe in the good book, and there's no room in there for any of that. All the same, something happened on my last deployment that I can't explain, and so that's why I'm here. It was nighttime, and I was at a gun site with my buddy Red. There used to be all these stray dogs hanging around, and a couple of them took to me and Red. Well, around midnight, Red went to get his chow, and I stayed behind with the two mutts. Not far from where we were posted up, there was a guard shack made out of a Connex container, and behind that, a HESCO wall. Between the shack and the wall, there was a narrow walkway, but nothing else. Nowhere to hide, is what I'm saying. Shortly after Red left to get chow, the mutts started taking an interest in the guard shack. At first, it was just stares, but then it was growling and showing their teeth. They would not look away from that shack, and that got me interested. I grabbed my rifle and shouted out for whoever was there to identify themselves. No answer. The mutts started pacing, still growling, eyes glued to the Connex. Something felt wrong. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, and my belly started to go sour. Taking my rifle with me, I started slowly walking toward the shack. My stomach got worse, and my footsteps sounded like the loudest goddamn thing in the world. When I got there, the shack was empty, and so was the corridor behind it. It took me a sec to realize that the mutts had stopped making noise, and when I come back around to the front, they were watching me. I shook it off, figured it was just the desert getting in my head, but then I started walking back toward the gun site. As soon as I did, the mutts' attitude changed. Their ears went back, and they looked scared. Understand, these are strays in a war zone, and they've lived through some shit. They don't spook easy. A second later, I heard a sound behind me, what sounded like something heavy, stepping on rocks, and my stomach dropped. I'm a combat veteran, but nothing I've experienced out there has ever put the fear in me like I felt in that moment. It wasn't natural. I spun around with my rifle, ready to go, and all I saw was a blur of something disappearing behind the Connex. That was it. I went back to the gun site to wait for Red, and the mutts didn't leave my side the whole time. When he finally got back, I told him everything, and he scoped out the Connex again, but came up empty. That was it for the rest of the night. And Paul, I would like to be recognized for my restraint in not reading that in some kind of hambone Southern accent.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Yep, I'll take it. I'll take it. It was a struggle. I saw the redneck thing, and I'm like, oh, you know, he said it. It's his word. He's, you know, but no, I refrained.
Whenever I hear military stories or stories from ex-personnel, and I've heard so many of them over the years, they're like when you hear hunters discussing encounters with Bigfoot. There's something of a different level of authenticity to them because I think these people are so used to being in life and death situations that they must have a heightened sense of awareness, which may be why there are so many stories of a similar ilk.
Oh, sure. And I mean, later in the show, we're going to have a story from a reconnaissance unit. And they specifically, the person in question specifically mentions that they were trained observers. This is what they were specifically trained to do, is to watch and to see. Because you can argue about, oh, well, you know, like if I said I saw X, well, I see a lot of shit and half the time I'm not paying attention. So I'm going to miss things. But when you're in the desert, there's sweet fuck all to look at. And two, they're trained to look for anomalies. I will say that it's funny you mentioned the Bigfoot thing, because I was thinking that this person, and of course, all these stories are things that we found online, this person had a gun. And it always makes me think when you see these guys on Bigfoot shows, you know, they're loading for bear, they got the big old gun, and they're acting like this is going to do them any damn bit of good out there. And this person had a rifle, and they were shit scared. And yeah. I think that's a great reminder that, yeah, it doesn't matter how heavily armed you are, when this stuff comes for you, it just doesn't make a difference, because it doesn't work like that. And I think on an elemental level, I think we know.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, I love the idea that the dogs saw him going over there and was just like, you idiot, you moron. So now, you know, if you're out walking Theo and he starts giving you the hairy eyeball, once he stops chewing on things, himself included, and you know, can focus for more than a few seconds, then you know, okay, time to run.
Yep. Obviously, one of my favorite GI stories is the incident on the rock in Helmand province in Afghanistan. And that involves a dog being aware of things about to occur before the humans realize what's happening.
Oh, really?
Mm.
I think we talked a little bit about Afghanistan on a previous episode, because we found that article from, I want to say, like military.com or something. But I don't remember covering this. So yeah, I'd love to hear more.
Yeah. So the rock was essentially an outpost in Helmand province that all the security forces took turns in looking after it for a 90-day cycle, I think. So the Brits would do it, the Aussies would do it, then the Americans would turn up, and then they'd change it, and then it just rotate between the different nations. And the particular story is about the 8 Marines, I think they were, turned up to relieve the British who were going. And as they were leaving, the Brits just said, good luck.
Oh.
And they didn't say why, they just said good luck. And they went, and they essentially, things were okay for a little bit, but the longer they were there, stranger things started to happen. So they'd hear the sounds of conflict in the middle of the night. The dog would just start barking for no reason at 3 in the morning, dashing about the compound. One of the guys spotted something moving through the barbed wire as if it wasn't there. And also moving incredibly fast. So he'd look and he'd see it like 300 feet away. He'd look away, look back, and it was 200 feet. He'd look away and then it was 100 feet.
Oh.
So it all carried on, and they ended up trying to dig down to make it lower so they'd have a better anti-sniper position. And they start to discover bones and things.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, it's the best example of that is Richard McLean Smith's Unexplained. He covers it on season 6, episodes 1 and 2, I believe. And he does a big sort of hour and a half, two-parter on it.
Okay. I
recommend it. If you want to listen to it, don't listen to it in the dark.
Well, I'll make sure to put a link for that in the show notes. Again, you can check that either at, either on the podcast platform of your choosing or at ghoststoryguys.com. We archive all the show notes there.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
the base. I got back from Iraq not too long ago and wanted to share some of the shit that happened to me in country. Because of my particular mission, I was confined to the Forward Operating Base, or FOB, working nights, 9 p.m. till 9 a.m, so I slept during the day. Our base had been built sometime in the 70s or 80s as a premier duty station for the Iraqi military, which Saddam was expanding at the time. It was bombed out in the Gulf War of 91. It's known a lot of violence and death over the years, and I have to imagine that's at least some of the reason it's such a hotbed of weird stuff. The first thing that happened was about a month into my tour. Our rooms were pretty tiny boxes that we shared with a roommate. Mine was Ty, and he was a good guy, but those rooms ain't much to share with even someone you really like. Thankfully, we were on opposite shifts and never had to see each other. On this particular day, I was racked out with my back to the centre of the room when I woke up to a slight touch on the back of my arm. I rolled over to see what appeared to be an all-black shadow, maybe 6'4", standing just a few feet away from me. My vision is for shit, so I assumed what I was seeing was one of my soldiers waking me up. I rolled over, grabbed my glasses, and rolled back to see who it was. But they were gone. I tripped the hell out. When I talked to my roomie about it, he wrote it off as a dream, and so I did the same. That worked as an explanation until 2 months later, when Ty was enjoying some alone time in the room. He had just finished and was getting out of bed to go clean up, when his headlamp lit up something at my end of the room. He turned to look and saw what he described as a big-ass guy, like its feet portions were hanging off your bed, which was like the same size as a college dorm twin bed. And it was all black. So pretty much a shadow dude laying on my bed. Ty went for the light switch, but by the time he got there, the figure had gone. After that, there was no more writing it off as a dream. Ty told me, and then together we told our platoon sergeant at Chow the next day. You never know what kind of response you're going to get with something like this. If your guy's an atheist, he thinks you're fucking with him. And if he's a fundy, he starts talking about Satan. But ours was cool. He turned out to be a believer in the paranormal, and said that he'd actually seen someone leaving my room at odd times in the middle of the day, times when I'm sleeping, and that someone would walk into the room across from ours. Thing is, that room had a padlocked plywood door because the guys who usually slept in there were in Syria and had left some of their gear behind, so you can't get in there without a key. I'm no expert in this stuff, but my interpreter told me the thing was a djinn because it kept getting close to me and manifesting physically. There were other things that happened at the FOB. For example, when you were using the porta-johns at night, you'd hear footsteps or whispers around you. Entry point guys who man the big gate, which has obstacles to slow the approach of anyone who wants to stir things up, would hear banging on the metal in the dead of night. But there wouldn't be anybody there. Towers would report people walking in open areas around the perimeter at night. Some guys would even see things on their night vision, but when the responders went to check it out, the figures would be gone. I had one last experience which still lives rent-free in my mind. For a while there, I was having trouble sleeping soundly, and so I ended up attending a sleep aid class with the medics. In that group were soldiers who were waking up from bad dreams, and I mean bad dreams, with scratches on them. Some of the scratches were so bad that they bled, and the men would wake up to bloody sheets.
So I gotta say, as if it's not bad enough you're in a constant life or death scenario, you've also got Freddy Krueger on your ass.
Not good.
No, sir. The other thing that occurred to me is I edited this one a little bit because alone time was explicitly, was more explicitly spelled out in the original version of the story. And I got to say, folks, you can all figure out what was happening there. I don't need to tell you. But I will say there would be few things more distressing to me than, getting off the telephone, so to speak, and just seeing someone lying there like that. That's actually that's nightmare level stuff. That's just realizing someone's been there the whole time. That is not my jam. Back to prison for Bren.
Yeah, that term means the same here as well.
Alone time?
Alone time.
Yeah. I thought, again, it was spelled out much more clearly, because these are soldiers and they don't give a shit. I also had trimmed out a lot of profanity, if you can imagine that, which is not something I would ordinarily do. But again, it was almost comical proportions.
Well, to be fair, if I'd been having some alone time and that happened, I'd be swearing a lot as well.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I mean, again, at that point, whoever's over in the other, the shadow in the other bunk, I mean, I'd start tormenting people in their sleep too.
How do we know that they weren't having alone time and the soldiers were interrupting then?
You know, Paul, there's some questions to which mankind is not meant to have answers, and that's one of them.
Who knows? Maybe that's where ectoplasm really comes from.
Oh, this has been the final episode of Ghost Story, guys.
It's more believable than 1920s psychic photos.
Well, that's true. I mean, no, we're not going down that road. We're not going down that road. Moving on to the, or going back, I guess, out of that conversation. A friend of mine asked me to give him a hand going through, he was working time for this. Oh, geez, boy, I regret phrasing it that way. Yep. Oh, Mike, I'm sorry. You're listening to this and, oof. All right.
You did. No, even what I was going to say didn't work there. I was going to say you did a friend a favor, but that's
nope. That's worse. That's worse. Somehow that's worse.
That's a friend of mine
a friend of mine was editing a fiction magazine, and he needed some extra readers to read some of the stories and give notes. So I read some of the stories, and one of them was about conflict. It was about soldiers, and it had a comical amount of profanity in it. And I remember giving my notes, and one of the things I said was, this sounds like a 14-year-old watched a Quentin Tarantino. It sounds like the Boondock Saints is what this sounds like. And that was one of the notes that they gave back to the author. They said, look, this is a bit much in terms of the language. And this person had been embedded, as I recall, and they said, well, no, this is how soldiers talk. And the point that was made to them was, okay, true. You know, that's fine. If, again, my life was in constant danger, I would probably throw a lot more F-bombs around than I already do, and that's already a lot. But there was such a difference between what, like reality doesn't necessarily sound right when you read it on the page.
Mm.
And, so anyways, the moral of the story is soldiers swear a lot, and so they should. And these stories are hewed as closely as possible to the original tales, except when flogging the bishop and bad words are involved. Talifar. In 2006 and 2007, I was deployed to Iraq and found myself stationed in Talifar. We were in a complex located in the middle of the city, and my platoon specifically was working out of an observation post on the second floor of the guard tower. Being where we were, things were pretty crazy generally, but even so, something about that tower just felt off. It started a feeling of unease, which we wrote off to nerves, but then it started to get weirder. I believe in spirits, sure, but even I wasn't prepared for this. Imagine something you can't see chasing you out of a building. That's what it was like. Like something was rushing me, hurrying me out like I wasn't welcome, and it wanted me to know that. It was almost inconceivable. The last place I ever expected to run into ghosts or ghostly happenings was the middle of Iraq. Then, towards the end of my deployment, it was time to pull one of my last guard shifts in that location, and I decided to see how long I could stay on that second floor. As it turns out, whatever was living in there didn't like me challenging them. As I waited, I started to be pelted with what felt like pebbles. I never actually saw them, you understand, but I could hear the telltale sound of rocks hitting concrete all around me. It was unmistakable. I never saw any actual shadows or apparitions while in Talifar, but I have no doubt that we were in the presence of something which was alive, conscious, and real. Real pissed at us for being there. I'm going to be totally honest here. I know nothing about the history of Iraq, but I did look, and Talifar is in northwestern Iraq, and it is ancient.
Yes.
Ancient. The Wikipedia entry mentions it being integral to the Assyrian Empire. So you think about that, that's 4,000 years old. So talk about an area with the potential to have immense power.
Absolutely. There are some incredible sites all across that particular region that date back millennia.
It's a shame what's happening there for a lot of reasons. And I will say that I understand that Paul and I, Paul especially, we are not unaware of the political complexities of what's happening in there and of Western military presence in an area like that and all the attendant problems that means. This isn't the show to focus on that. This is a show focusing on the ground level perspectives of people who've had these experiences while serving their countries. But again, we want to be clear, we are very aware of the complications and issues with Western military presence there. If you want to send us an email and bitch at us, you can, that's fine. But we just want to say there's a reason we're not addressing that here, and that's just because this isn't the forum for that. But it is an ancient part of the world. And like I said, it's a shame that it's just so unstable, because I would have loved to see more of it, to see any of it, really. The closest I ever got was 2008. I was trying to get into Syria because I was already in Morocco and Egypt, and I'd gone back to London at that time, but I really wanted to get into Syria. But it was a whole process, basically, and I was just too lazy, essentially, to go through with it. I can't say like, oh no, I was hamstrung by bureaucracy. No, I was just too lazy to get an Arabic translation of my passport done. But I really regret not doing that now, knowing how much that region has been decimated and how much history has been destroyed.
Very much so. I mean, I've been fortunate to visit Tunisia, which was just after the spring revolutions across that particular region. And some of the history there was just incredible, jaw-dropping. Some of the buildings and the art and the statues, it was amazing. But also you had to realize that you were literally wandering around somewhere that had been at war 6 months previously, and it was quite strange as well.
Oh, I'm sure. We were supposed to go to Tunisia in 2008, my cousin and I. You know, we went to Morocco. Then the plan was we left Tangier on the ferry boat. The ferry boat took us to Genoa. We were going to stay a couple nights in Genoa, and then we were going to take another boat to Tunis. And we both got so sick in Morocco that we ended up having to stay a week in Italy and recover. We had to blow off Tunisia completely. And I really regret that, because I've heard so much about it. I wish I'd had an opportunity to see more of it.
It was very odd as well, because obviously there was still conflict in Syria as well. That had just started. And so you'd be driving around the roads and stuff in the middle of nowhere, and then there'd just be somebody with a little table on the side of the road selling milk cans full of petrol.
Oh, really?
Well, they were just coming in from over the border with anything they could carry.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And so any road, they were just setting up shop just to try and earn some money so they could carry on their journey and get away.
I wish people were more aware of these things, of the cost of these wars to the people who live in these regions. And I'm always pissed off when I see people say things like, when a bunch of folks came over from Iran, and they said, folks said things like, well, they have cell phones, how can they be refugees? And I thought, well, they're not escaping from the 18th fucking century.
Yeah, they're not time travelers.
Yeah, that's it, right? It drives me nuts. You know, people have such a narrow idea of what constitutes a refugee. And even just the word sometimes, I think, produces these associations and produces these insane reactions in people. And it is very frustrating.
Absolutely. People's anger should not be focused on those beneath you, but those above.
Absolutely. Punch up.
Every time. Night vision. Before we get started, I should say that I'm former army and spent a total of 28 months in Iraq. I was with a recon unit, so we were taught how to observe, what to look for, what to report, basically how to be a good eyewitness. I'll tell you this now so you understand that what I'm about to tell you happened and wasn't some kind of idiotic fantasy. In the late summer of 2006, my unit was moved from Mosul to Sinjar, which is the home of the recently persecuted Yazidi tribe. Sidebar, the Yazidi were an awesome bunch of people with more compassion than I was accustomed to seeing over there, and they also had a unique set of beliefs. To them, Mount Sinjar is a holy site. It also happened to be the tallest terrain feature around, and so it was the best possible site for a communications retransmission station. With a retrans station comes retrans security, and that, friends and neighbours, is where the weird begins. I had pulled security on top of the mountain with another soldier, basically watching avenues of advance to make sure no one got the drop on the commo guys. About 0300 hours, we observed in our night vision goggles a person approaching us from the base of the mountain, walking up a goat trail. Not knowing who it was, we radioed it in and kept eyes on him. At this point, I removed my night vision to give my eyes a break and looked down the hill. And there was no one there. My battle buddy confirmed he still had eyes on it, but even with good illumination and the figure only being about 150 metres away, I couldn't see him. Weirded out, I looked through the thermal sight, and I couldn't see him there either. I put my NVGs back on, and there he was, 100 metres out, just watching. So my question is, what was it? What does not show up on thermals but can be affected by infrared? That's what keeps me up at nights.
There's a lot more short stories on this episode than typically we do. I try to usually get longer stories, but some of these were just so good. And I think they just pose such relevant questions. I thought, no, we have to, if we got to go with more short stories, that's fine. Because stuff like that where you've got technology and something appears to be defying it, I find endlessly interesting. Because technology is our yardstick, right? It's the thing we use and say, oh, well, you know, the instruments say this cannot be. But in this case, the instruments are going, what the fuck?
Especially when it only affects one particular type as in that one.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's stuff like that, I wish, I guess a skeptic would say he's making up the story or whatever, but I just wish people who try to automatically dismiss this stuff would look at things like that. And again, you don't have to say, oh, it's a djinn or it's an ifrit or it's a whatever. You just have to say, okay, maybe there's some shit I don't know.
It's very similar. It's kind of the opposite as what happened at the Rock, because they could see it, but nothing technological would show the vision. So when they took their goggles off, they could see it. When they put them on, they couldn't.
And I have to imagine that kind of inconsistency makes it even harder to pigeonhole. Because again, looking at it from a purely skeptical point of view, you could say, oh, well, you know, this one turns up on night vision, but not thermal. That one didn't turn up on either thing. Therefore, it is all nonsense. You know, again, there's no consistency, but that, I find that even more appealing because it just is consistently, it's almost like it's consistently confounding your expectations on purpose.
So it must be an owl.
Naturally. A 5 foot tall owl. Paging Mike Cleland. Eyes like the sun. At the time of this story, I was deployed to southern Afghanistan. One night we had set up position to secure a particular site, and by 2 in the morning, only me and the forward gunner was still awake. I'm not a night guy, so I was more zoned out than I should probably have been, but still I was able to keep scanning with my night vision. On one pass, I caught a figure stepping out from behind a corner, maybe 75 yards away. It was a reasonably bright night, so the NVGs weren't as effective as they would ordinarily be, but I was able to determine I was looking at a man, just one taller than usual. Then he turned to look at me. This man, or whatever he was, had eyes so bright it started burning out my goggles. That's something that only happens usually with sunshine, and I freaked out. When I pulled off the glass, that's when I saw those eyes weren't just bright, they were burning a neon red, shining like the sun. Even more panicked, I reached for my rifle and trained the thermal optic on this thing. Its body was so cold that he stood out from the background, but those eyes, those goddamn eyes, started to burn out the thermal too. I toggled my safety, and it was like he heard the sound because he cocked his head and those eyes fixed on me. And then he just walked off into the night. Of course, I thought I was losing my goddamn mind, and I wasn't going to tell anyone about it, but then a few weeks later, some of the guys were shooting the shit over Chow, and I heard Big Mark, this big Cuban guy from Florida, a lifer, talking about seeing some stuff when he was in Iraq. Once the other guys started to clear out, I went up and asked if he had a minute, then told him what I just told you. This is what he said, or as much of it as I remember. I seen something like that twice, the first time in northern Iraq. It didn't burn me out, but it did leave a permanent mark on my gear. I was tight with the Raytheon guys, and they serviced my shit, and they said they had no idea what caused it. The second time, we were doing an assist on a group trying to feel out some HVTs. HVT means high-value target. Shit was quiet, and everything was fine. The lead operator called no joy, and we maintained our position to provide cover in the valley if needed. I checked random movements and confirmed no threat with my spotter. Then I swept over a window and saw the same burning eyes. My spotter confirmed, and we both had a little bit of a WTF moment. After that, we were finally cleared to withdraw, so we packed it in. I talked to a translator about some of this shit, and he said that conflict can bring things like that out, but who knows? Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, there is a very infamous alleged story that came out from Afghanistan, isn't it, about the giants of Kandahar, or the giant of Kandahar.
Oh, I hadn't heard this.
So there is a story that I think first surfaced 10 years ago about a group of US special forces, I think they were Rangers, that were sent on a recon mission into the mountains and encountered a cave with loads of skeletons around it. And as they were scouting the area, this allegedly 15-foot-tall red-headed giant stepped out of the cave and attacked them, killing one of them, and they had to machine gun it for 30 seconds to bring it down.
Jesus Christ.
Allegedly, the giant was then picked up by a Black Ops helicopter and flown away to a military base, never to be seen again. Now, this is one of those stories where there doesn't seem to be much evidence other than somebody said this, and therefore it's
right.
True.
Right.
So I'm not really sure.
I did wonder.
However, at no point in the original story does any creature be described as having burning bright red eyes. So one would suggest that, as far as I'm aware, that would probably lean it to be some kind of djinn, because obviously the djinn can be of any shape and size it wishes to be, such is their power.
Yeah, that was my thought too. And I do have some notes and some stories set aside for a purely djinn episode. That'll probably wait until I'm back in Victoria, because I have back there, I have Robert Lebling's book, Legends of the Fire Spirits.
Yes.
And there's some really great information in there. But yeah, I was thinking that too. And djinn are specifically name checked later in the show in one of the other stories. And that does seem to be very likely. I remember back when I used to listen to Mysterious Universe before they sort of went off the deep end. I remember one of them went to, I want to say Saudi Arabia. It might have been Dubai. I can't remember which. But he said that everywhere he went, people were burning this very thick incense. And he asked someone, you know, what is the deal with this? And they said, oh, it's a djinn deterrent, essentially. And it's fascinating. You know, we've come so far in the West away from any belief like that we just, you know, institutionally can't even entertain the notion. And you do wonder what damage that causes.
Did I ever tell you about one of my friends from work who's from Somalia originally, who told me of a story that happened to his uncle's friend who was almost killed by a djinn that was pretending to be a mermaid?
No, I would remember that.
So once he found out I was doing the show, he knew I was open-minded in regards to stories like this. And I love things like this, because these aren't the stories you normally hear from people, because obviously it depends on the person's cultural beliefs. And obviously from him being from Somalia, he's a follower of Islam. And so he basically said, oh, well, you've heard of the djinn. And obviously because I'd heard of the djinn, he was like, right, well, I can talk to you about it then, because I know you're not going to go, oh, that's stupid. So he felt his story would have some mutual respect, which it did. So he was telling me about his uncle's friend used to walk along the beach to get home every night from working. And he'd walk the same way for a long time. And this one particular night, he could hear this singing. And as he looked towards the sea, he could see this woman stood in the sea singing and waving at him. And he obviously thought, oh, that's a bit strange, and ignored it. But this started to happen every night, every time. And every night he found himself walking closer and closer to the edge of the sea every day, even without realizing it, he said. He didn't realize that his path was sort of coming in a curve, so he was getting closer and closer to where she was. Until one particular day, he was there with his my friend's uncle, and they were both walking. And he suddenly started to talk as though he was hypnotized, and his uncle was saying, what are you doing? Come back. And as he got just about to step into the sea, my friend's uncle grabbed his friend, and the creature screamed and dove under the water and swam away.
Jesus Christ.
And they never saw it again.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is terrifying, because that combines two things. Yeah, creatures I do not understand and do not have my best interest at heart, and the water, which I do not care for either.
So, yeah, I thought I'd mentioned that before, so apologies if I hadn't. It's a belter,
no, I don't believe so. That's a hell of a thing. So I'll trade you. Mine isn't quite as dramatic, but I recently ran into a fella, and I mentioned that I do this show, and we got talking. And kind of similarly, I think he sort of relaxed a little bit, and he mentioned that, you know, he'd grown up in Montreal, and they'd moved around a little bit. And he mentioned this one neighborhood, and I cannot remember the name, and sadly, I didn't, you know, exchange information with him, but it was a semi-rural, I would say a wooded housing development. And he was coming home from work one night, and he lives with his folks, so he wanted to smoke a joint before he got home, so he detoured through this park. And again, there's trees in the park, and he's just about to light the joint when he heard what sounded like a tree cracking. And he just assumed, oh, you know, it's like a branch broke or something. But that's when he realized he was looking at this hulking figure in the trees with bright eyes. And he said he thought he was looking maybe at like a raccoon up in the tree or something. Then he realized, no, this thing is man-shaped, but it was probably a good 3 feet taller than he was. And it was massive and broad and muscular, and it was just staring at him. He described it almost like almost dog-like, but he said it was very scary and very unnerving. And he said, I turned around and I walked back out, but he said for the next two nights, he went into the park on the way home trying to sneakily smoke his joint before he went to go home to see his folks. And both times this thing was there in the trees watching him. And after the third night, he went back again and it was gone. So it was clearly not a natural function. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't a tree with a raccoon in it or something. It was some kind of hairy creature, enormous, muscled, and staring at him. On the inverse of that, I was talking to Nick the other day, and she was taking out the garbage. It was nighttime, and she saw this thing in the shadows behind the dumpster, and it had four glowing eyes. It was small. It was like this furry mass. And she thought, what the hell am I looking at? And then she realized it was two raccoons having sex.
I thought you were going to be really sweet and say it was a raccoon with a baby on its back.
Nope. She said these two raccoons, they were just piled on top of each other, and they clearly were not very happy. So they separated, you know, after she turned up and ruined the party. So they separated and just sort of glared at her. And you know, she went back inside to think about what she had done. So is it dog man or is it just two raccoons getting their bang on? It's hard to say, Paul.
Well, I hope she gets an invitation to the christening. The man in the hatch. I was deployed to Iraq in 2010-2011, and my unit experienced a few weird things while we were there. We were replacing a unit who were leaving their vehicles for us, and a couple of weeks before we arrived, they'd lost two men in a suicide bombing incident. I'm not sure if they belonged to our particular vehicles or not, but given everything that happened afterward, it feels worth mentioning. The first incident happened around 11 p.m. or so. For this to make sense, I should explain a bit about the vehicles we were using, Strykers. Strykers are eight-wheeled light armoured vehicles which carry 9 troops. We use them over there because they move faster than tanks and protect more than a Humvee. When they're not in use, we padlock their hatches, and only the platoon sergeant and driver have keys. On the night I'm talking about, one of the drivers, Coates, had just finished doing checks on his Stryker and was walking away when he saw a light on inside the one next to it. That one was the responsibility of Muldoon, who was notorious for leaving stuff switched on, so Coates made a mental note to let him know once he got back. Coates was just done locking up when he saw movement in Muldoon's driver's seat and realised he must still be in there. We all liked to clown each other a little when the opportunity presented itself, so Coates slowly climbed up to the striker's hatch so he could spook Muldoon a little, but it was still padlocked. So was the back door, as it turned out, and when he went back around the front, no one was in there anymore. There was no way for someone to get in or out without having to take at least one of the padlocks off, and the doors aren't exactly quiet to open or close. The next thing happened inside of Muldoon's striker. We had to pull guard in the turret, and I was on a night shift sitting by myself, when the communications box, which hung down on a cord below the turret, slammed into my knee and started swinging back and forth. I tried to recreate it several times for the rest of the deployment, and I couldn't. It would have taken a good amount of force to swing it from where it rests to even being close to my knee. Others in my unit reported hearing someone talking whilst they stood on guard, and even feeling a presence in the vehicle. I am sure there are more stories that they haven't cared to share due to being tough, gruff, cavalier scout types. It wasn't uncommon for some of us to spend countless hours watching the blackness of night, talking to whatever was in the vehicle. After a while, it becomes, if not normal, just accepted.
So, Paul, in the break, I mentioned to you that I'd had a conversation with someone about a particular UFO sighting they'd had, where they claimed that they saw it with other people, but everyone had the experience that it was actually quite difficult to focus on, almost painful. It wasn't bright, but it was uncomfortable to stare at directly. And you were saying that that's not necessarily uncommon when with dealing with UFO sightings.
Yeah. Some sightings have ramifications like that, where the witnesses will have problems with their eyes. They'll have what could be assumed to be some kind of burn. Often people will try and say that it's radiation poisoning, or sometimes even people will be looking at the same object and describing two different shapes, which is one of the most recent versions of that is there was a witness on one of Ryan Sprague's Somewhere in the Sky witness accounts a few months ago. A father and daughter were looking at an incident, and the daughter thought it was some kind of saucer-shaped craft, where his daughter believed it to be cylindrical, and two of them in a line. So he, because he didn't trust his sight more than his daughter's, he went with what his daughter was seeing, even though he couldn't see what she was describing. He was seeing something very different, which then offers up the opportunities. Do they appear as people expect them to be due to the witness rather than the actual shape of the object? But then I suppose that takes us into the realms of high strangeness and the cosmic joker.
Like an observer effect.
Yeah. And that's not uncommon. I mean, there's not many cases like that, but there are more than you would suspect, and enough to make you think that there are certain incidents and sightings that are far more than some kind of nuts and bolts craft, if you could use such a term, towards these objects.
Right. Well, I know it reminds me of my own personal experience, which I mentioned in Strange, which was when I saw the green light. You know, it happened to my friend and I at the same time, but I distinctly remember the light originating from above Mount Revelstoke, which was right in front of me, whereas he remembers it seeing coming from Boulder Mountain, which was behind us. But we both remember the fact that we were bathed in this neon green light, which was very, very strange. But again, yeah, completely different recollections of where it came from.
That happens as well. Other people say they see things, the same incident, but different sort of aspects to it. Somebody will see it to the left and others will say it came from the right.
Well, don't trust the skies and lock your doors is what we've learned.
Always.
Did he ever expand on that statement, by the way?
No, he hasn't.
What a bunch.
I haven't left the house for a fortnight.
I need groceries.
They're throwing them through the window.
Well, I mean, I knowing some of the Skip drivers I met when I was doing food courier, yeah, that's possible.
Yeah. I was out taking the dog for a walk yesterday and somebody had a takeaway delivered and they wouldn't open the door. They were having it pushed through the window. It's like you're lazy.
Oh, for Christ's sakes. I understand, you know, especially during the pandemic. When I was delivering food, I would just leave it at the door and knock and then bugger off, which I actually liked because then I don't have to socialize. But I'm not putting it through the freaking window. I'm not, you know, every now and again, people would have stupid instructions. You know, there was one guy, I delivered a pizza to these kids, and I honestly, I probably can't even repeat on the show what they wanted me to say when I dropped it off. But it was weird, is the short version. And I thought, no, I'm not. Your tip was
Izzy Wizzy, let's get busy.
That would have been maybe okay. That would have been maybe okay. But whatever it was borderline obscene. And again, unless you're paying me big money, which they were not, this is not happening. There is another time, and I think I told this story on the show a long time ago, but it was a very weirdly horny night with food delivery. Because I delivered a bottle of wine to this woman, probably about 10 years older than I was at the time. I delivered the wine, and she was telling me, oh, I just finished doing all this gardening. And she said, oh, you could stay and help me with the gardening. And I said, oh, I said, that'd be bad for your plants. I said, I'm not much for the garden. She's like, well, how about you come inside and help me finish this wine instead? I was like, oh, man. All right. You just went for it. I mean, believe me, I'm flattered, but no. Rain check next time. Okay. Yep. Bye-bye. It's a good thing these orders are randomly assigned. And then later that night, a couple of like small things happened. Then later that night, I had to deliver some McDonald's. This was late. I used to like working the night shift. And after midnight, it was almost all McDonald's. So I was delivering some McDonald's to this house in the burbs. And there are some people it was kids. I got there and it was kids. They might have been in their early 20s, but they looked like high school. They were having a party. They were getting pissed. And the sign, the instruction said, you know, bring it around to the patio door at the back. Don't knock. And I went to the door. I left it there and I hit delivered. And then I heard them say, Jenny's going to show the delivery guy her boobs. And again, I thought, you are underage. This is no, I know we're not doing this. We're not doing this. And so I walked away faster than I ordinarily would have. And I heard the door open behind me. And I heard, ta-da. And then I heard, oh, because I was walking away. And I thought, nope, this is like, is it Persephone? No. What's his name? Eurydice. I'm not looking back. Nope. This me and Lot's wife. I can turn into a pillar of jail sentence if I turn around. So, no. Hard pass. Text to Nick afterwards.
Perils of delivery.
I'm telling you, man, I've heard stories from other delivery guys about stuff like this and other things. And a lot of it, you just figure, you know, you're shooting the shit outside McDonald's at 3 a.m. You got to have something to talk about. It's a little bit like the penthouse letters, you know, I never thought it would happen to me. Yeah. Cause it didn't, but.
Where's David Duchovny when you need him?
But yeah, that night there was something moving through the air, and it was. It was uncomfortably horny. Ghost Town. This will be our final story for tonight. I was an infantryman during the invasion of Iraq in 2003. We pushed into Baghdad and then took an airfield just north of the city. We then kept going north, up Highway 1. The majority of my unit stayed in Tikrit, but my company kept going north with armor to a huge enemy ammo depot near Baji. We began operating around that area, and then shortly moved to nearby K2 Airfield and set up a more permanent forward operating base. K2 Airfield had a residential area that had been abandoned near the end of the runway. It was on-post housing for the Iraqi Air Force personnel that ran the base, but they had left way before our arrival. What was strange is that it seems it was abandoned before the invasion. There were pots and pans in the sink, there were clothes on the line, but there was lots of dust all over everything. Looters had been there. They were everywhere during that time, but they left mostly everything. My unit moved into the end of the airfield, into some bombed-out warehouses, and an MP company moved into the biggest houses in the abandoned housing area, which we started to call the Ghost Town. The MPs that took up residence in the Ghost Town moved out after about a week. I asked one of the very tired-looking MPs why, as everyone was jealous that they lived in actual homes, albeit abandoned shabby ones, instead of bombed-out warehouses, and I was curious about their speedy move. He said that they couldn't sleep. Doors would open and shut all night. They heard footsteps running up and down the halls at night. And then finally, they began to see children's faces looking in at them through the windows. The U.S. Army does not function with consideration to ghosts, And for them to get their chain of command to move their whole company out of the ghost town, there must have been some tangible events that affected their operational readiness. Their move meant that now our residence was a new perimeter of our FOB closest to the ghost town, so we took up nighttime security every night around our warehouse. We would each do an hour shift, and we had a watch going all night long. We had thermal sights and night vision, and we would sit out there scanning the desert for enemy activity. During our watch, we could all hear children laughing and playing all night long. It sounded like a playground was active in the ghost town, but we verified with our thermal sights that it was empty. We had pebbles thrown at us. We would sit out there, alone or in pairs, and listen to the laughter while getting hit by rocks. Nothing big, but they would bounce off your face, your helmet, your vest. The whole time, scanning with thermals and night vision, nobody there, but still listening to the laughter. This happened night after night. We all talked about it with each other. Nobody was happy about it, but we sucked it up. In 2004, we had a change of command, and upon hearing about the situation, our new commanding officer said, "There is no supernatural activity in this ghost town, only enemy activity." This was partially true, because we had been attacked with sniper fire and RPGs from that direction multiple times. His decision was to set up a nightly patrol and set up ambushes in the ghost town, every night. We were already busy, looking for WMDs during the day, ridding Saddam's Ba'athists during the night. We'd been doing 18 to 36 hour patrols, QRF, convoy security, more patrols, show of force, ambushes, the works. And now this. So, it began. My squad had done the new patrol a few times, and it always seemed extra dark when walking through the ghost town. There was an old British fort left over from their colonial days, with firing ports and towers. Streets with sidewalks and pretty decent houses, all empty. While on patrol, we could still hear the kids playing, but it seemed just as faint as when we were on perimeter guard. We would get on a roof, lay there on ambush, and just listen. To the wind, the kids, and that's it. One night we were patrolling through the ghost town, in a modified wedge formation. One of our soldiers said, "What the fuck?" then screamed, "What the fuck is that?" He pointed his weapon to the middle of our formation, then dropped his weapon and ran. He ran alone in the dark, unarmed in the middle of a combat zone, away from everyone. Those of us that looked where he pointed, we saw it. Those of us that looked at the fleeing soldier heard it. Walking with us was a solid shadow with, roughly, the shape of a person. Tall with really long arms, skinny legs, and a narrow torso. It turned its head back and forth as if surprised to be discovered. It bent down and then leaped. It landed in a crouch on top of a nearby chain-link fence still facing us, and moving its head to look at us. Its eyes then quickly flashed red, and then it jumped backwards off the fence and disappeared into the night. We caught up with a soldier. Our squad leader was super pissed. He got roughed up a bit as he'd absolutely lost it, screaming and crying. This soldier was solid. I've personally seen him shoot an enemy combatant at close range. We'd all been through a lot, and we were both confident and competent. What we saw that night was not the scariest thing we had been through that deployment. Engaging the enemy on the regular was. But the enemy made sense. This creature didn't. It was by far the most disturbing thing I've ever witnessed, as it seemed to have a purpose keeping pace with us. From that point on, whenever it was our turn to patrol Ghost Town, our squad leader would lead us just to the edge, and we would wait an ambush. To this day, I think we all appreciate that. Well, Paul, that one, I think, is going to be the one that stays with me tonight when I close my eyes to go to sleep. This idea that this thing is pacing you and just thinks you can't see it. And that raises the uncomfortable question of how often is that happening? How many of these things are out there? And are they watching us? And how often?
Well, maybe it happens all the time. And for some reason, this ability to hide in plain sight wasn't working on that particular excursion.
Yeah, it is. It is not great. Because again, in that situation, you know, you're dealing with an ancient civilization. You're dealing with enemy combatants. You know, the nonchalant way this person says, well, you know, periodically there would be sniper fire and RPGs, just like, oh, it's raining today. No, absolutely not. I used to play ball with this soldier ex-soldier, I guess. He had finished his, I can't think of the word, but yeah, he was no longer, he'd done his tours and he was now a civilian. And he had this incredible, he called it his war voice. He would joke about it. You know, I got a great war voice. He said, you know, when you're over there, he was British and he'd served in Afghanistan. And he said, you know, you have to be very loud. And we always said, oh, we want to hear your war voice. He was on our softball team. And he said, no, I don't want to do it. So we always thought he was full of shit. And then one day something happened. Someone from our team was leaving to run an errand for the team and he had forgotten something. And all of a sudden, we were shouting to the guy in the truck, you know, our other teammate who was leaving, hey, come back. Can't hear anyone. Well, here comes this guy. I won't say his name because he has a very distinctive name, but here comes this guy. And yep, war voice was a real thing. It was like like Thor's hammer, but issuing forth from someone's larynx. It was terrifying. You know, what's his name? Black Bolt, the superhero whose voice can crack planets? Yes. I get it now. I get it. I don't have that. I've been told I have a pretty decent voice, but it is a voice that is very dependent on being relatively close to a microphone. I don't have a booming voice. I don't have that. And so I hats off to the folks out there who do have a great war voice.
Yes, it's one of those things that you do have. I think it depends on your trade. If you follow a sports team or you've worked in the licensed trade or entertainment industry, you have a deep bellow available at a moment's notice.
Nope, it's
very good when you're trying to impress 7-year-olds in a wood about a Bigfoot impression.
Well. I mean, your Bigfoot impression works even just at a one-to-one conversational level, I got to say.
Yeah, we were chuckling. We were thinking if somebody had been walking past outside of the woods and they'd heard me giving it Bigfoot, you know, next thing we know, there's a story in the Daily Mirror, Bigfoot on the loose in Sheffield.
Yep, 6 more podcasts spring up and they're all your fault, everyone. Bigfoot in the UK, proof, finally.
Listen to vocalizations. Blah, 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 blah.
And at the end, he goes, fucking hell. Oh, geez, Bigfoot's a Yorkshireman. I guess that figures. That figures. That's why he's so loud. He's got his lungs have been made strong by years of breathing coal dust.
And bathing in bitter.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, using coil for soap.
Oh, boy, here we go. It's going to turn into that episode of Who's the Boss when Tony met someone from his old neighborhood and they were trying to show off about how poor they were. I don't know if you ever watched that. Yeah. But, you know, one of them goes, we were so poor, if I wanted a hat, I had to hollow out a melon and put that on my head. And then the other guy went, at least you had a hat. Yeah. It's going to be this.
But it's the famous Monty Python sketch, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Four Yorkshiremen.
Oh, okay.
And the four of them are sat around, and they expect that's it. Where it gets to the point, you had a house where you were lucky. We used to live in a hole in road, and we used to have to get up at 6 a.m. and his dad used to beat us, and then we had to lick road clean with his tongues. You were lucky, lucky. Our dad used to wake us up before we'd gone to sleep and then he'd kill us and we still had to work 25 hours a day, 8 days a week. Lucky!
Plant that
for 10 minutes.
This has been your Yorkshire cultural lesson, courtesy of the Ghost Story Guys. And with that, we're going to draw to close our first installment of Haunting in the Military. Again, if you like that, let us know. Shoot us an email, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com, if you want to hear more. If you are or have been in the military and you have your own story of the strange and unusual, again, let us know. GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com. Now we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with our Ghost Force shoutouts. Hey there, listeners. Before you reach for that skip 15 seconds ahead button, I promise you this isn't an ad. We wanted to take a minute to talk to you about mental health. On this show, I've always tried to be as honest and open as possible about my struggles with depression and anxiety, because even though we've come a long way towards acknowledging the very real damage these things can do, there is still way too much lingering stigma about reaching out for help. And when you start to feel like there's no help, it's easy to start feeling like there's no hope. But Paul has joined me today to remind you there is always hope and there's always help.
We're not going to try and talk you out of self-harming right now, because we know that's not how it works. Instead, what we wanted to do was tell you something now and hope that should things get bad, you'll remember it and make a phone call or send a text message before you make any permanent decisions. As someone who knows all too well just how important mental health can be, it's never too late to reach out.
In Canada, the number to call is 133-456-4566. In the USA, the new number to call is 988. That's 988.
In the UK, the number to call is 116-123. Or text SHOUT, that's SHOUT, to 85258. In Australia, the number to call is 131114.
However bad shit seems, it will pass. And no matter what your brain might be telling you at any given moment, and believe me when I say I know this intimately, there are people who love you and people who care deeply about how you treat yourself. Should a time come when you find yourself despairing, please know that we've both been where you are, and there is a way back to the world. Take care. Welcome back. Thanks, as always, to Luke, Anthony, Sarah, and Joseph, everyone else who's part of the Ghost Hunter Guys family. Don't forget to check out Luke's podcast, Luke Lore, available everywhere fine podcasts live. And of course, Joseph's YouTube show, The Cardinal Rule, available on YouTube. And we host the independent horror film podcast, Weird Together. You can find that everywhere fine podcasts live. Our most recent episode should be out by the time you get this, and we'll be talking about the brand new horror comedy, Mean Spirited, which was a lot of fun. Again, you'll find that on podcast platforms everywhere. And I'll link it in the show notes as well. And, of course, thank you, my friend and co-host, the inimitable Paul Bestel, the paranormal Johnny Carson himself, host of Mysteries and Monsters. Paul, what's coming up on M&M?
This week, we have a return with John LeMay as Roswell's Finest takes us down the rabbit hole of cowboys, dogmen, and werewolves. So we dive into some cases that he uncovered from the Wild West of people meeting hairy bipeds and not Bigfoot running around.
Interesting.
And then the week after, I have an epic, almost two-hour conversation with Keith Linder as we talk in the first part of a two-part, which will be out later, probably towards the end of April, the second part of it, as we talk about everything that happened at the Bothell Hell House poltergeist case.
Oh, man, I cannot wait for that show. That is going to be so cool.
He was such a lovely bloke as well, Keith. Really nice. Really honest up front, frank, funny. And we had a really, really good chat. And I just didn't want to rush it. So that's why we're doing two parts, because we only cover the first two of the five-year infestation that they suffered.
Holy shit. Well, cannot wait to hear it, folks. You're going to want to hear that too. Where can everyone find you online?
You can find Mysteries and Monsters on all podcast systems and also across all social medias just by searching for Mysteries and Monsters.
Brilliant. I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Largely the Truth. You can find my podcast, Largely the Truth, with Brendan Storr, which is apparently coming back. I had some folks come to me who wanted to have a chat, and I thought, yes, I would like to talk to these people. So that will be coming back here in the next couple of weeks. And of course, Weird Together, which is me and Joseph Comeau talking about independent horror films. You'll find those on, as I mentioned before, podcast platforms everywhere. As we said at the top of the show, if you want to join the team, help support us, you can head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. You can sign up. We have any number of tiers with all kinds of bonus shows, physical rewards, digital rewards, and you can get that all by heading to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. If you want to get some of the bonus or most of the bonus stuff, but you don't like Patreon, We will soon be offering subscriptions via Apple Podcasts. That's basically ready to go. I've been working on that for a while. And so that'll be launching sometime in the next couple of weeks. And again, if you're already a patron, you do not need to sign up for it. You will not be getting anything. They're not getting anything patrons aren't getting. This is just a way for people to access our bonus content without having to deal with Patreon's back end, because sometimes Patreon can be a pain in the ass. So again, keep an eye on our social media for more about that, and I'll talk about it more on the next show as well. And speaking of patrons, if you support the show at $20 and above, you become part of an elite club. One that special. We like to call Ghost Force. Patrons who support the show at the $20 level and above are part of an elite club. You are Ghost Force, and we love you, you crazy bastards.
Special spectral friends.
Oh, that's a great tattoo. When I come to England, we'll get that tattoo. This time around, the members of Ghost Force are Ethan Saragon,
Amy Chamberlain,
Brody Daniels,
Gary Lambertus,
Cheryl Baker,
Crazy Mom,
Generic Bob,
Hunter Brown,
Hannah Siemens,
Hillary DeSasseur,
Jane Moores,
Jane Doe,
Jason R. Slaughter,
JJ907,
Jennifer Mullen,
Jennifer Shackle,
Jessica Linder,
Joseph Camo,
Kimberly Hansen,
Maddie Leatherman,
Mara Noriega,
Mark Semler,
Semler. Peter Gunn 08.5,
Rebecca Brink,
Rhonda Sheen,
Robin Tien.
You are the few. You are the spooky. You are Ghost Force. For real, guys, thank you so much. We can't tell you how much your generosity matters to us. We really, really appreciate it. And if you want to join the team and have your name read out in that absolutely bizarre segment, you can head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. And you also get things like, with that, you also get ringtones, you get copies of my art card, night photography art cards, lots of cool stuff. And again, that's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. All right. So Paul, the only thing I got coming up is I was just recently a guest on Supernatural Circumstances with Mike Brown and Morgan Knudsen. And I don't know when that's coming out, but I imagine it's probably soon-ish. So make sure to check that out. I'll put a link in the show notes when it finally drops. It was a great conversation. I was honored to be on the show. Just both very intelligent people. Had a great time. So again, folks, when that comes out, make sure to give it a listen. Also, the issue of Haunted Magazine with Paul's article in it is now available, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you can pre-order issue 37, which I was both humbled and very surprised to see my story featured on the front cover. So I'm not sure what went on there, but that was a lovely surprise.
As well it should be. And again, we'll put a link to order that in the show notes. Make sure to order copies. Support the, it's a great publication, and of course, support the fabulous Paul Bestel as well. If you want to pick up some Ghost Story Guys gear, or including your very own Goat Story Guys shirt designed by Catherine Holmes, you can do that at ghoststoryguys.com. And of course, you'll get a personalized thank you video from me if you do. So again, that's ghoststoryguys.com for all your GSG merch needs. Shout out to our composer, Rainy Days for Ghosts. Rainy Days for Ghosts is a project of film journalist and composer Jerry Smith. You can find Rainy Days for Ghosts music streaming pretty much everywhere, courtesy of Night Harvest Recordings. That is, of course, the Ghost Story Guys label. And if you want to hire Jerry for your next project, shoot them an email at rainydaysforghosts@gmail.com. Our theme song is Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, composed and performed by Peter Kursov of Pizzanta Music. Find more from him by searching for Pizzanta Music wherever you get your tunes. Our story's theme is A Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. Find more from them by searching for Hexagram wherever you get your music. Remember, that's Hexagram with two X's, not three. And I guess that's going to do it.
Well, we'll be back in 2 weeks, but until then,
into the darkness we go. Why the fuck won't he sleep? It's like a buffalo.
That thing takes down elephants. What's wrong with this fucker?
When his headlamp lipped. Sorry. No, fast asleep again now.
Done. Of course. Yeah.
So if I go like that, he's very relaxed, shall we say.
Oh.
Because it'll have made a smell.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And they do smell.
Yeah, that's fair. My friends had a cat who would do that. Chico. He was one of those, the hairless ones.
Yeah.
And he looked perpetually pissed off, and he would jump on your lap and you'd think, oh, I'm the chosen one. And then he would, you'd start smelling. You think, oh, you motherfucker. And then he would jump off you.
Yeah. Somebody sent me a video of a hedgehog farting yesterday.
Seems like the kind of video you would get. I'm not surprised by this.
Yeah. Lifted its leg up, went, and then just went off going, like that, as they do.
That's more or less how I live my life. Just ask, yeah. Ask Nikki.
Jesus.
Was that his tail? Oh.
All right. Come on. Pop. He's just woke up. Hang on a second. Sorry.
Yeah.
Come on. You want to go over there? Come on then. Come on. Okay. So he wanted to go over there. Now he wanted to go back.
So had to go see what over there was all about. Even Everlast, thinking about what it's like in ends. I remember the first time I heard those, and now they're 24 years old.
Mm. Yeah. Next year is going to be troubling for me because that's when all my favorites start hitting 30. At 40 even, sorry, fucking hell.
Because he asked me a very specific question about hash, and I said, honestly, I don't know, but I can find out. Oh, you don't know. You work here and you don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not a walking encyclopedia on all things fucking cannabis. I'm going to burn your house down. I didn't clock the time earlier. Okay. I was like, oh, we have plenty of time. Oh, no, we have 25 minutes.
It always flies when we're having fun.
I'm telling you. I think we spent like an hour and 15 minutes gassing at the beginning.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, no, that's how I feel. I guess it's been a while because it was like every week and then it was 2 weeks.
No, we spoke last week.
Did we speak last week? Was last week the live show?
Yep.
Oh, weird. Okay. Still had lots of shit to talk about. All right.
There's a fifth time we've spoken in 4 weeks.
That's wild. Well, again, it's nice to know we still have things to talk about. As we said at the top of the show. What was that?
That was just a really weird noise.
Okay. Kev's getting his revenge.
Sounded like a robot coughing.
Oh, that's weird.
If you can imagine such a noise.
It's not a great sound that I'm imagining. Okay. All right. So after this, I have to process the files and then try not to play Assassin's Creed for 4 hours. Hey, Lara, isn't this thrilling?
Should be on pay-per-view, this book. Yeah. Sorry, I was talking to you there. And I'd muted myself.
I wonder what was going on there.
Hey.
Hey. How you doing?
Hey, sweet cheek.
How you doing, huh? Huh?
Hello, sailor.
Interesting. That was like a transatlantic telephone operator trying to pick me up in a Longshoreman's bar. Hello, sailor. Again. Stop. Bring that dick over here. Stop. Don't stop. Stop.
Daddy wants some sweet peanuts. Stop.
I was not expecting that.
Have you got your inhaler? You all right?
Give me a second. Okay. Oh, that caught me off guard.
Just like my sweet peanuts.
It's true. It's one of their many powers. Oh, let's just take that from the top.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line
prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.